Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, we're going to look at the issue of avian flu in cattle because H5N1, one of the many viruses that cause bird flu, has killed tens of thousands of marine mammals and it's begun to infiltrate American livestock for the first time. Scientists are working to assess how it's evolving, how much of a risk it poses, with the farming community concerned about it reaching Irish shores, along with the concerns of a spread to people after the virus was detected in a person in Texas. Now, for more on all of this, we're joined by Amy Ford, news editor with the Farmers Journal, and Dr. Gerald Barry, assistant professor of virology at UCD. Good morning to you both. Amy, I'll start with you. This is a concern for Irish farmers at the moment after seeing that news from the US. Avian flu has been here before, but not in cattle, in birds.
That's correct, Colin. Thanks for having me on. I suppose this type of bird flu, this highly pathogenic bird flu, it has a severe impact on birds. And sadly, about 2 or 3 years ago in Ireland, we had an outbreak in a number of domestic flocks in Ireland. So farmed birds that had to be totally depopulated and culled as a result of the bird flu. And this type of bird flu is fatal in birds, but at this moment in time, in cattle in the US, anyways, it's not shown to be fatal. There's, you know, there are symptoms of decreased milk production, decreased feed consumption, dehydration and fever, but it is not proven fatal at this moment in time yet. And I suppose the Department of Agriculture in Ireland here has told us that they're closely monitoring the situation, but there are no cases of that highly pathogenic bird flu in Ireland yet this year, and no instances in the cattle population either.
I suppose the concern for farmers here would be, number one, reputational for a market like China, where, you know, they just got back in, and also then in the issue of live cattle exports, there might be other countries concerned about the transmission of flu there. So a bit of nervousness maybe amongst the community here.
Yeah, I still think this is very far away, but if it was to land on these shores, no more than any other new type of disease, column, you know, undoubtedly it could have an impact on our trade. We export 90% of our agri-food that we produce in this country, and that would have a big issue there. And obviously then the selling of cattle around the country anyways would obviously be impacted domestically as well as our exports.
You compared the disease to blue tongue disease. There was an outbreak of that. Saw a cattle ban on exports from the UK recently.
Yeah, so that blue tongue disease, it was carried by midges over into the UK. Essentially, that's how the disease is spread. And it Britain locks down exporting cattle to Ireland because of fears of, obviously, the disease reaching here. There was a big testing campaign undertaken here for any animals that did enter the country from Britain within a certain period of time. Obviously, all of those animals tested negative for blue tongue, but if that entered here, there would be control zones placed around infected farms or areas where infected cattle were found, or sheep or goats, because it can infect them all.
All right,
and it would have serious trade implications if it was to be identified here as well.
All right, so I'm going to come back to you on that, Amy. Stay with us, because I want to bring in Gerald Barry, Assistant Professor of Virology at UCD. Gerry, I know you've been monitoring this outbreak, but how rare is it for avian flu to break through into cattle?
It's very rare. I can't think of any other reported outbreak similar to this in cattle. I mean, we do get versions of flu in cattle, but not this highly pathogenic H5N1. It hasn't been seen before in cattle, which is why it's unusual and probably hitting the headlines a little bit more than perhaps has been seen in the past with other types of outbreaks.
And the transmission to an agricultural worker, obviously, you know, people are nervous given what we all went through from 2020 onwards. There would be some nervousness at the transmission of this and what effect it might have. So what do we know about its human transmission at this stage?
So just to kind of a little bit of a timeline, this virus jumped into, or at least was first emerged in birds back in 1996, and has basically spread across the world in both wild birds, poultry, farm poultry, but also lots of different types of mammals as well. It has led to the death of millions and millions, actually, of different types of animals, including poultry. Up to about 500 million poultry have been affected by it. In all that time since 1996, there's less than, as far as we know, 1,000 cases in humans. it doesn't spread well between humans, but if you have close contact with animals that are infected with it, it seems that it can, on occasion, rare, but on occasion, spread into humans. So it doesn't do very well when it gets into humans, in the sense that, you know, our typical winter flu obviously spreads really well in human populations, but this avian influenza, thankfully, hasn't adapted yet to the human population. So if you get a very large dose from an infected animal, it's possible on rare occasions to become infected. But thankfully, at this stage, at least, it doesn't appear to spread well in human populations.
And what animals should we be concerned about becoming infected? Who'd have the kind of most analogous immune system to humans? And, you know, where would it be more likely to be transmitted from animal, where it comes from jumping from animals to humans?
Yeah, so I mean, when we think about flu, I suppose we think avian flus tend to be quite well adapted to birds, as you might expect. So things like wild birds or poultry. Mammals are quite different to things like poultry. And so the immune system barrier is quite different. Once the bird or avian flu figures out how to start to spread in mammals, it's kind of overcome that barrier. And so the jump then from a mammalian animal, say a cow, for example, into humans is not so much of a leap compared to something like jumping from a bird into a human. So it's kind of moving closer to us, I would say. There isn't any particular animal that you could kind of cite to say, well, if it gets into that, it's definitely going to get into humans. But the fact that it's now regularly jumping into mammals and causing outbreaks of disease in mammals suggests that it's slowly evolving and adapting to the mammalian immune system in general. And that then kind of alerts us to say, okay, if it's able to get into any kind of mammal, that increases the risk that it's going to adapt or learn how to start to spread in humans.
Yeah, it already seems to affect some mammals worse than others. There hasn't been any, you know, widespread ill effects on cattle, but marine mm-hmm. mammals, sea lions, it has hit them hard.
Yeah, absolutely. There's been some massive outbreaks in seals and sea lions. There was there was an outbreak in Peru about in the last 18 months. About 5% of the total sea lion population, over 5,000 animals, have died as a result of this avian influenza outbreak in sea lions. Seals have been affected. There's been outbreaks in mink. There was one major outbreak in Denmark and in mink farms in Denmark. Bears have been infected, so and even there was cases in a couple of fox cubs in Northern Ireland found last year. So, different types of mammals are capable of being infected by this. Some, as you say, are affected worse than others, but this is a global pandemic to an extent, definitely in birds, but also in mammals as well. And, you know, and I mean global, it's moved from China all the way across, and they're even now seeing it in penguins in the Antarctic. So it's really a global outbreak of disease at the moment.
All right. It's not inevitable that it could get worse or I suppose, affect humans or mammals in a more severe way, is it? Because I suppose for the virus to survive, a living host is better than a dead one.
And absolutely, yeah. So, nothing is inevitable, I suppose, but it's always about kind of monitoring, good surveillance, keeping track of what it's doing and watching to see, does it learn or does it adapt or is it showing signs of adapting to, say, human population? So, no, absolutely, at the moment, it's very much just a watch and see scenario. We're not in any way predicting that it's going to start, causing major outbreaks in humans. But that potential is always there. Influenza has done it in the past. And so we know that it can jump from wild animal species into human populations and adapt to humans and cause major outbreaks of disease. But it's very much a watch and see at the moment and tracking it carefully, sequencing its genome and watching for signs and signals that it might be starting to learn. I suppose what's particularly interesting about this case in cattle is that when you see outbreaks in wild animals, you kind of assume that humans don't necessarily have huge contact with wild animals for the most part. When it starts getting into animals like cattle, which we obviously have much more contact with, you start to open the door a little bit more to potentially the virus jumping into human populations, because you increase that encounter and that ability or opportunity for the virus to evolve a little bit more. So that's maybe something that we just need to keep a close watch on.
All right. And is that because cattle are in the human food chain, or is that because agricultural workers just work in close proximity with them?
No, so I think it's important to stress that there's no evidence that any product from the animals is able to transmit to humans once it's treated properly. So they've tested it very carefully. The milk produced from cattle that were infected by this avian flu, once pasteurized, has no evidence of virus surviving. So pasteurization will inactivate the virus, and there's no evidence of it surviving in the meat either. Raw milk is potentially a route of transmission. So in the US, they're advising people to avoid raw milk at the moment, because pasteurization seems to inactivate the virus. But importantly, it's more about that close contact through either farmers or farm workers that are in contact with either the milk or perhaps nasal secretions from the infected animals. That's the most likely route of transmission, right, seems at the moment.
You mentioned surveillance there a few times and monitoring. So what level of surveillance and monitoring is there in the herd in Ireland on an ongoing, consistent basis to pick up what's going round?
Yeah, I think Ireland is very good at this in general. I mean, I think there's always areas we can improve on, but in general, we monitor disease in cattle very, very closely. What we watch out for, of course, is symptoms or things like, say, a drop in milk yields to indicate illness, and vets are very careful, and farmers, of course, are very careful to watch out for things like that. But also there's emerging kind of surveillance more nationally as well, beyond the farms. So we're beginning now, funded by the EU and also the Department of Agriculture, to do more proactive surveillance of things like wild mammals in the country or birds, or even looking at products from farms to see if there's any potential for picking up things like influenza if it did happen to come into the country. So we're, you know, collecting samples from things like foxes and badgers and mammals, so sea mammals such as seals, just to see and keep track to see if something did emerge or pop up in those populations, that we would be picking it up very, very quickly.
All right. Can I go back to you, Amy, and ask you just what has the knock-on effect been for the US? Has it affected US exports?
A lot of the milk in the US, because this has impacted dairy herds, will be consumed domestically, Colm. The USDA said it doesn't expect there to be a need, I suppose, to cull or depopulate herds as a result, as I said earlier, because cattle aren't as impacted as birds would be, and any milk that obviously, as Dr. Barry pointed out there, once it's pasteurised, it's safe to consume because it inactivates the bacteria or the virus. The USDA, that's their Department of Agriculture over there, they've said that it hasn't sparked a milk recall or anything like that, and at this moment in time it hasn't had an impact on total milk production. You know, farms in nine states are affected, and there's 36 dairy herds, so it's not really having an impact on supply there at all yet.
Right, and no country's putting in precautionary restrictions on any the export of any US product so far.
So there is interstate testing now of cows taking place. That is happening there. And I think Colombia last week banned, in a slightly quick move to ban US beef imports into the country, just as a precautionary measure. But then again, the USDA, it actually hasn't detected bird flu in any beef herds. And it tested a number of mince samples, 30 samples, and they all came back negative. And they're saying that they're confident that their beef supply is safe.
Okay, Amy Ford, news editor with the Farmers Journal, and earlier Dr. Gerald Barry, assistant professor of virology at UCD. Thanks very much for joining us. Coming up, Stay Classy United. Will Ferrell backs United, Leeds United.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.